go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! As some great baseball broadcaster once put it, holy cow! Were you listening for the last 2 hours? If you weren't, why not? And if you didn't, then as soon as it posts, go ye promptly and download today's edition of the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility. No, really. This was a masterclass. This was civics. This was American history. This was history of philosophy, all rolled up into one little tiny Big Bang two-hour ball that just kaboom, and suddenly you understand what a bunch of prevaricative, mendacious, lying, no good, rotten the right wing are in this country. What we had today from Dr. Bill O'Brien. And I really do want you to hear this. What we had today from Dr. Bill is an explanation on why the Declaration of Independence isn't what the right wing think it is and constantly prattle on about it being, even if it isn't. Bless his heart, if poor little George Will could have heard what got said today. Well, if words could kill, they'd take George Will away in pieces in a basket at about this time. And without ever saying a harsh word in the process. This was just a surgical deconstruction of right-wing, phony, baloney, fake civics. You know, the one about... And we've referenced it from time to time here on the program. To wit, when some blithering idiot wingnut will say, well, you know, as it says in the Constitution, God done gived us life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, back in the founding days, they used a F instead of a S. And so it's the pursuit of happiness, which God ordained. Well, it turns out that's all baloney. You know, here in the Horn Family Commune congregation, we understand that if a right-winger is talking, they generally are lying, lying. But in the world, the world writ larger, maybe that's not as apparent. But holy mackerel. You want to understand what the Declaration of Independence really is? It's there. It's for you. It's free. It's 2 hours. It's today. It'll go up as a podcast sometime shortly after, probably 9 p.m. Central Time, 10 p.m. Eastern. I've frequently referred to Dr. Bill's propensity for using the axe handle, and man, he put it to good use today. Just bang, right, occipital lobe. I mean, this was the Zen master coming along to the young monk who wants to know the meaning of it all and saying, go and wash your rice bowls. I mean, the right wing needs, the right wing would need years of rice bowl washing to begin to even fathom the depth of their own perfidy. So, I'm a little fired up. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you'll find a broad selection of stories from of news around the world of the day. And that is where I hope you will go and you make use of the pop-up tuner that John Fox has kindly added to the site, where you will find, among other things, hey, look, the chat room, which is free and easy to attend, a delightful opportunity to enjoy a full multimedia experience here at the Horn. It's filling up now. Jan R's there. Sentient Being is there. Waggy's there. Indefatigable Horn chat room moderator and Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator Sparky is there. Good evening, one and all. More will be along presently. It's a fun little conversation. I encourage you to try it out. Also, of course, at headonradionetwork.com, and this is the part I hate the most, is the PayPal button. This is the 29th day of April 2014. And we are, because we are independent, because there's nobody out there sponsoring us to implore you to buy gold now or get yourself a Bose Wave radio that you can listen to on your Swedish-inspired NASA technology mattress on which you can bounce a bowling ball that you can then pick up with a vacuum cleaner that you can order online. Because none of that is happening. All of this happens only because of you. And I don't say things very often like, you know, well, we're hanging on by a thread. But, hey, look, we're hanging on by a thread. The fundraising hole at present is somewhere around, let's see, $470. And we need to dig out of that plus whatever we can raise tomorrow evening to even come close to finishing April where we need to be. Some of this occasioned by, for instance, you know, technical difficulties and whatnot. Phones are working again. Don't know how long they'll continue working, but, you know, they're working again. Ben's hard-won solutions to streaming issues seem... Wait a minute. That's wood, by God. That ain't no veneer. Seem to be working. But things, you know, things are always dire, and they're about as dire as they can get. We will enter May hoping to finish May, and a big part of that is coming up with $470 this evening and $150 tomorrow. And I'm proud to announce that Sparky, whom I mentioned earlier, has pulled the pin on the Horn hole extinguisher. So Sparky's pull the pin challenge will obtain this evening. He is willing to match the first $100 that roll in toward getting out of this hole and sort of peering over the top furtively and hoping that there's no oncoming trains, bulldozers, what have you. So it's there. If you would like for your $10 to become 20, if you would like your 20 to become 40, if you'd like your 50 to become 100, the first $100 in contributions that come in this evening will be matched as a result of Sparky's pull the pin challenge. Thank you very much to Sparky, who has been with us for a very long time and is now not only serving as moderator in the chat room and moderator in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, but also helping to keep this entire effort afloat, and it is very much appreciated. Thank you very much. So this is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and I am proud to note that Jan and Jerry just turned their 20 into 40, so thank you very much. We have $80 to go now to meet Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And that will, if we can meet that, that'll take our 470 hole down to a $270 hole, and maybe then we can keep going. Oh, the things that happen in my everyday day. Early this morning, well, not really early, but I saw the news that another installment payment had come due on America's Second Amendment butcher's bill. It came due in Kennesaw, Georgia, You might recall that Kennesaw, Georgia, is a community in Georgia that has a city ordinance that requires every citizen residing within the city limits to own a firearm. They have wisely not tried to enforce it. Some people in Kennesaw still don't own a firearm, but it is on the books because there's an operating philosophy in Kennesaw that says if everybody just had a gun, America would be perfectly safe. That, then, must be why it is that, there was a shooting today at a FedEx facility in that neck of the woods. Details were sketchy early in this morning, merely that six people had been shot. One appeared to be in critical condition. The facility, the FedEx facility, was in lockdown. But I immediately tweeted and Facebooked a concept. At least six people shot by a lawful, awful gun owner at FedEx facility in ATL. Thanks, NRA. Hashtag, just another day paying the Second Amendment butcher's bill. Silly me, I hashtagged NRA. That empowered a little wingnut who on Twitter goes by the moniker of Arctic Gummy Bear and who identifies himself as John 316. Parents name their kids all kinds of stuff. I mean, I guess maybe he's named Mark. So I had to go and check out. Born again at 22 years old by reading Isaiah 53. Don't bother. I'm the child of the living God. Not a child, but the child. Hello, Jesus, the God who tells the end from the beginning. I'll thank you to leave my end alone. The only God who can save you, capital letters, Y-O-U. And apparently I had gotten on the wrong side of at Arctic Gummy Bear. I have to mute the microphone to titter a little bit. Arctic Gummy Bear. I guess they're not melting as a result. Oh, never mind. So this walking lizard brain who was saved at 22 by and became the Son of God, he said it, I didn't, said, and how many saved by their own lives by owning guns? Duh. I really didn't have time to flesh that whole out, that whole thing out, and I bring it up only because this is, after all, Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, when we celebrate the Titanic intellects that are on display virtually every day in America from the right wing. You know, the folks who lie about the purpose of the Declaration of Independence or the meaning of it, and yada 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 yada. Bless his heart, George Will apparently thinks that the Declaration of Independence is the law of the land. I think that'll be a little interesting when we get down to the parts about the King of England and the heathen savages. Maybe, oh well. How many saved their own lives by owning guns? Duh, all caps, duh. Hey, yay, yay. Is he suggesting that there were six people who weren't shot or people who weren't shot at the FedEx facility because they were standing there with their little shaken hands and their NRA Freedom Protector Woods clenched in their chubby little fists? Don't know. But it did occasion a response. Now, I wrote back to this poor little moron, this Titanic intellect of the right wing. Thus you say to grieving families that theirs are acceptable losses for things in your imagination. At least you're honest. Which occasioned, shortly before airtime, a note from Dr. John, who said, I'm still laughing at that Twitter exchange with John 316.
you know, by the way, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son that whosoever believeth upon him should have everlasting life and not perish. Yeah. Nothing says the love of God and everlasting life quite like gun ownership. Dr. John, noting, again, still laughing, he says, that right-wing goob's reply to you is about the dumbest thing I've read all month. And, well, you know, Dr. John does wander around in the Twitter sphere, Twitterverse, whatever, and he sees some sure enough bona fide certified silly from time to time. So, yeah, that's, yeah. And Dr. John goes on to note, memo to right-wingers, if you want to face off with Bob, you got to come correct. You got to bring your A game, not your D game. This ain't JV stuff. Sheesh. And I don't, that was just a mistake on my part, hashtagging NRA. But, you know, the more ends ye have always with ye. And there's just no real getting around it. But I'll engage them and then block them after them. You know, just reply, block, done. Because otherwise life is short. Well, it's short anyway. Why waste any more of it? Hey, thanks going out to our buddy Jack in Shreveport, who occasioned Dr. Bill's profoundly incisive 2 hours this afternoon with an email that led off the program. Thanks to Jack in Shreveport. Jack just doubled his $25 from $25 to $50, thanks to Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge. So that means that we are only there's 55 more dollars to double if you would care to do so. So thank you very much. Oh, my goodness. Wow. So now there's only $5 left to double because Mark just doubled his. And Mark says, keep up the good work. We're trying, Mark. We're trying. It's just a matter of, you know, I'll be here as long as we can hot up the mic and, you know, keep everything cooking. Thank you very much, Mark. At least $5 to go. We can Sparky can double 5 to 10 if anybody wants to do that thing at this moment. So let's see. To recap, 470, 270. We are now $275 away from coming even, so that we can get close to finishing May, April, not March. To the good. Sorry, the acid reflux is acting up, and I think some of it's backing up into my brain. Well, those little noises Flesh Flimball makes on the air every day. But it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn, and, well, there's a couple of stories out there that just sort of jumped out at me. One of them being, And there was an allusion to it during last night's Moran Monday broadcast. The story of a woman who, and this is one of those stories that's an onion. I don't mean it comes from the Onion, the parody site. No. I mean it has layers and layers upon layers. This is a story of the abject, senseless paranoia that inhabits those thin gray settlings that slosh about between the ears of your right-wing gun goobs. Wolverines! And causes them to do things like threatening the lives of other people. Enter a woman by the name of Belinda Padilla. Belinda Padilla is no Brady campaigner. Belinda Padilla is no enemy of firearms. Belinda Padilla is a firearms merchant capitalist. She is, in fact, president and CEO of the U.S. division of a firearms company called Armatix, A-R-M-A-T-I-X. Now, Armatix, then, is a German corporation, and Armatix claim to fame is that they have developed a smart gun. Now, I don't know that R. Maddox and I have the same working definition of smart gun. In order to qualify as a smart gun, I think R. Maddox would have to be manufacturing a gun that could tell in that split-second instant when a lawful gun owner becomes drops the L and becomes an awful gun owner, the gun would have to be able to know that and not fire, thereby preventing things like today's FedEx shooting or the massacre of some children in Connecticut or the massacre of some people in Aurora, Colorado, or the massacre of some people in Tucson, Arizona, or the massacre, 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 before I would allow it to be certified as smart. But that apparently, well, I didn't get a vote. Instead, the R. Maddox smart gun, which already is on sale all over Europe and Asia, because, you know, freedom? Wait, can we say that about Europe and Asia, that they get freedom? I thought only we had freedom. Cognitive dissonance. Sucks. No, the R. Maddox smart gun comes with a little watch-like gizmo that you put on your shooting wrist, and I guess there's some sort of a transmission between the firearm and the wrist thingy that then lets the pistol know that the lawful gun owner holding it is the lawful gun owner of the smart gun. So when you pull the trigger, I'm sorry, squeeze. You know, the wing nuts get so upset when we talk about trigger pulling. You have to squeeze it, and you have to breathe, and you have to aim so that you get them, and sometimes you have to lead them a little bit. But the upshot is only the lawful gun owner who owns the R. Maddox weapon can fire the R. Maddox weapon, because it's smart. So Belinda Padilla, being a firm believer in the capitalist system and the right to keep and bear arms, I keep my bear arms in the closet, that's kind of a, never mind. So she began to try to market her smart gun in the United States, and the lawful gun owners, yeah, sorry, Devin, we haven't gotten the chip implants yet. You know, I'm a big fan of the Takeshi Kovacs trilogy by Richard K. Morgan, and he writes about some really, really nifty firearms in there, and, you know, futuristic stuff, 500, 1,000 years in the future, what have you. No, no chip implants yet. Well, but then again, Devin, once you hear what's happened here, you'll understand why there's no chip implants. The little watch that you wear to shoot the R. Maddox firearm is called the IP1. UP2. We all pee. Never mind. Different conjugation. So she begins trying to market this thing, and then lo and behold, a bunch of gun goobs, Wolverines, decide that she's some sort of enemy, and start doing things like, well, she describes them early on as a few fuming mad voicemail messages and heavy breathers, after which she stopped answering her phone. Then the Freedom Protector Woods, posted photos of her home online, and she told the New York Times, in a crude cartoonish scrawl, this person drew an arrow to the blurred image of a woman passing through the photo frame. Belinda, the person wrote, is that you? Yeah. So after a gun goob group in California found out about the Armatix smart gun. The outfit called Calguns, kind of, Calguns take me away, you know, in a body bag. Calguns came after her. And the Oak Tree Gun Club in L.A. had agreed to start selling the smart pistol, but after Calguns came after them, they ditched the idea. Because, you know what? The gun goobs are only free if anybody can shoot their gun, not just them. I'm like I said, this story has onionish layers. And one of those is that the gun goobs are objecting to a gun that can only be fired by its proper owner, when in fact, had such a thing been in place, Adam Lanza would never have been able to shoot Mother Lanza's shooting gun at the little six-year-olds at Sandy Hook Elementary. Yep. And this country has story after story after story after story every year of people who go out there to defend freedom against the criminal element, and the criminal element kicks their ass, takes their gun, and blows their brains out. People are at least as likely, if not more likely, to have their freedom protector used on them than to use it on someone else. And then there's the statistic of the number of people in this country who, you know, borrow somebody else's firearm to blow their heads off or shoot themselves in the heart or whatever manner they find most effective for suiciding purposes. In point of fact, what these gun goobs are hooting about is the fact that they don't want no guns out there that some criminal can't purchase and take back up to Detroit or New York or Chicago or Boston or and sell on the free market so that they can be used to shoot maybe, you know, a 9-year-old and keep her from becoming a 10-year-old because freedom and because money. I mean, what in the hell is the use of having a Second Amendment if you can't defend freedom and capitalism and the free market and make a dollar doing it? But Belinda Padilla says she is not intimidated by God. She said she won't quit. This is my mission in life. If they really understood our technology, they wouldn't be afraid of it at all. We mean you no harm. Please, get on the spaceship. Look, we have a book. It's called To Serve Man. And the gun goobs are out there hollering, wait, it's a cookbook! Now, Padilla went on to explain to the New York Times, right now, unfortunately, these organizations that are scaring everybody have the power. All we're doing is providing extra levels of safety to your individual right to bear arms. And if you don't want our gun, don't buy it. It's not for everyone. It's just for people who want to make sure that their gun can't be shot by anybody but them. I mean, I think back to that story, for instance, from a few years back out of Selmer, Tennessee, where the wife of the God-fearing, upstanding, righteous Christian Church of Christ minister was tired of having to dress up like a hooker every time in order for her righteous, upstanding, God-fearing Christian minister, Church of Christ pastor husband to be able to get a stiffy. And so eventually she got the family shotgun and unloaded the 12-gauge in his back. And as soon as the jury saw the wig and the stripper heels that she had to wear in order to turn her husband on, they just wrote, not guilty. Now, if that had been a smart shotgun, she never could have never could have blasted the bejesus in out of the out of her husband. No, because I'm sure he being a fine, upstanding man of God would have made sure that only he got the special wristwatch. Oh well. Here's the fun part. This from the story. Apparently, the Obama administration supported Armatics company's sales pitch, the idea of a smart weapon, and they did so only after the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre in December 2012, because I guess the administration officials thought, huh, sure would have been nice if young Adam couldn't have got hold of Mother Lanza's arsenal. But unfortunately, Armatics' attempts to bring the firearm to the to market were stymied by the gun lobby. In other words, Sturm Ruger, Winchester, Remington, Confederate Arms, on and on and on. Yeah. Because the Obama administration felt the need to say, hey, we support some guns, see? Dear God in heaven. So, a lawful gun owner who can lawfully buy a firearm in this country could buy maybe an Armatics pistol and go and, you know, shoot up a convenience store. What do you mean you're out of blue raspberry Slurpee? My God, this is America! Die, commie! My God, they still got that red Slurpee, but they ain't got no, ain't not got no American blue raspberry Slurpee. Oh, freedom. Wolverines. So this country and the gun-mad, paranoid lunatics who run it are so eaten up by their own paranoia, they don't want... Hell, you know what? If safeties were to come out, were just coming out on the market, they'd oppose those two. Oh hell, I ain't having them semi-automatic pistols. They got a damn safety on. I want a six shooter. Ain't got no safety on it. Because when I need to protect freedom, I need to protect it in a hurry. Safeties is for sissies. Jesus. PBS, back in 2013, even had a documentary, or at least a little feature piece on how the smart gun works. But by all means, let's check it out.
Be made safer by making them smarter. Ray Suarez explores the possibilities of personalizing gun technology.
This is button number one, number two, number three, and number four.
At a firing range in Southern California, Belinda Padilla prepares to demonstrate a new gun. The gun knows if you're allowed to fire it.
Once you sync the watch to the firearm, it is now a personalized firearm, and you can never use it as a regular firearm. So only the authorized user will be able to shoot the firearm.
The new handgun, manufactured by the German company Armatix, uses radio frequency built into a wristwatch that must be worn in order to fire the gun.
So then, these two units are speaking to each other.
These two units, yeah, this is radio frequency technology.
Belinda Padilla is the president and CEO for the U.S. division of Armatics. A personal PIN or code number activates the gun.
If I only want to activate the handgun for 4 hours or 2 hours, I decide.
The Armatics gun is not yet on the market in the U.S., but national debate this past year over how to decrease gun violence has brought attention to owner-authorized technologies.
The purpose is to provide safety for the Americans that want to protect their family. Can you hear me?
Padilla showed us how the gun won't fire when taken away.
What Victor's going to do is he's going to shoot two rounds, And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to demonstrate how the technology works. I'm going to take the firearm from him once he shot the two rounds, and you'll see the light turn green, from green, which means the authorized user, to red, which means I'm the unauthorized user, and the firearm will not shoot.
Well, let's see.
The red light on the handgun indicates Padilla is not the owner.
Fire.
And then he takes it back and it'll just rev up again. He doesn't have to do anything. Huh? Oh, there's the green light.
Long in research and development, owner-authorized guns like Armatix's have been dubbed smart guns. Other personalized technologies in development include the use of biometrics like fingerprints or palm prints to identify.
Well, I think we've heard enough, haven't we? Now, okay, I've got a better understanding now. We can't have this technology because it's got a RFID chip in it, a little radio broadcaster. It could be used by the jackbooted thugs of the government to hunt you down like a jackal. But even more. Well, if you gotta wear a wristwatch for your gun to be a shooting, you know what that is? I mean, the Patriots are out there trying to prevent this. Remember when they was trying to chip our little youngins down in, what was it, Louisiana, Stan, just to get their school lunch? And the parents stood up and said, "No! In the name of Jesus, no! You ain't gonna be putting no mark of the beast on our youngins for a sloppy joe." Well, you know what, Devin? You may have missed your calling in marketing. Devin says, "I bet they could sell a shitload of them in the South if they stamped a swastika on it." No, not a swastika, Devin. A Confederate flag. They'd fly off the shelves. Call it the Jefferson Davis smart weapon. Or the Robert E. Lee. You gotta stand up when you say Robert. But no, that's what it is. It's the mark of the pistol beast. Because the Second Amendment in this country doesn't just mean the right to keep and bear arms. It means to have the arms that you have a right to keep and bear taken from you and used on you. Yeah. Wolverines. Freedom. Somebody cue up that song about how if tomorrow they took away everything except my children and my wife, but including my firearm, which they then used on all of us. And God bless the USA. Oh, dear. an observation coming in from our buddy, the Angry Indian. If they knew what swastikas really stood for historically, you know, like the ancient Indian symbolism, a swastika equals good fortune, they would reject it in the South as left-wing propaganda. Oh, that's good. That's good. That's very good. Thank you, Dr. John. The Jefferson Davis smart weapon, Dr. John asks? What, it only shoots at people from your own country? Yeah, they probably wouldn't go over down south because you couldn't use it to commit treason. True. All too true. By the way, we are 20 minutes before the hour, and we still have $5 to go to meet Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge here for the end of April. Marty with a trenchant observation. You can't have a smart weapon for a stupid population. I saw a video the other day of a guy who was shooting his shotgun. And he pulled the trigger. I'm sorry, he squeezed the trigger. And it just went click. And he had on, I forget what it was, his you can have my gun when you take it from cold dead hands hat. Or maybe it was his NRA hat or his Freedom. Or maybe it was his Wolverines hat. I don't know. He had some hat on or something. And I think his first name was Wiley. And so after the shooting gun doesn't shoot and he knows there's a shell in the chamber, our lawful gun owner, on video no less, puts the stock of the shotgun on the ground and leans over the muzzle of the shotgun with his little pumpkin head. At which point the shotgun went off and blew his hat right off top of his head. Oh dear. But see, we can't have technology that would keep that from happening. You know, some sort of a proximity sensor that said, I'm sorry, Dave, you put the stock of the shotgun on the ground and you're now looking down the muzzle of it. I can't allow this shotgun to fire, Dave. I'm sorry. Daisy, Daisy, it's only BB guns for you. No, can't have that. True, Jack. Jack in Shreveport pointing out, no mark of the beast to get the meat of the beast. At least not down here in Louisiana. Chip us not, big government. Oh, heck no. Pretty soon, I guess, we'll be seeing Gadsden flags out there with a sort of... Actually, it's already out there. What is it? There's a take on the Gadsden flag, yellow field, and the coiled-up snake looks really stupid, and the fangs are coming out kind of buck-toothed, and it says, don't turd on me, or something like that. Yeah. Don't F-R-I-D me, bro. Ouch. Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Tim from L.A. with our relevant verse for why the right-wingers don't like the RFID. From Revelation 13, verses 15 to 18. The second beast was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast. That's beast on beast, isn't it? No wonder it's evil. So that the image could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be killed. It also forced all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on... Wait a minute. Since we eliminated slavery... Oh, don't confuse them. To receive a mark on their right hands or on their foreheads, so that they could not buy or sell unless they had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Then why in that book? Let the person who has insight calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. That number is 666. Okie dokie. Kind of reminds me of my son's take on word problems in math in high school. If Johnny has four apples and Susie has three bananas, who's going to win the third race at Aqueduct? And the answer, of course, is golf ball. Tim from L.A. pointing out, even though the RFID is passive, meaning it cannot be scanned from long distances, the RFID can be the mark of the beast, and if the rapture were to happen, the good Christian may be left behind. Every time I type left behind, I want to change my first name. Thank you, Tim. Thank you. Jack won't let it go. And don't chip us to get chipped beef with that creamy gravy and all. And, oh God, the cat had biscuits. Oh, damn. Oh, give me the number of the beef, the beast. I just want the damn, I'm hungry. Well, okay, Texas Betsy, well taken. You mean the answer to the word problem isn't Jeebus? Well, it probably is in Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana and Georgia. And, no, in Georgia the answer is 40 caliber. Probably in Texas and Oklahoma. And so, because in, is it Oklahoma? Yeah, or is, yeah, hold on, let me check. Where is it? Yeah, I was going to kind of save this for tomorrow, but it seems to have inveigled its way into today's conversation. There he is, Iowa. There you go, Oklahoma, getting some relief. It's Iowa way. Where there are four Republican candidates for the U.S. Senate who seek to take the seat of retiring Democratic Senator Tom Harkin. The candidates include radio host and retired Air Force Colonel Sam Clovis. He made the point, see what I did, of using natural law as a litmus test for judges. Hey, by the way, if you check out the 2 hours previous to this program, you will find Dr. Bill O'Brien utterly debunking the notion of natural law. That could come in handy when dealing with wingnuts. He wants a litmus test, but Senator Joni Ernst, remember Joni? She's the one who wants to castrate Congress. Yeah, I had the squealing pigs, and they sure do got a pretty mouth. She's Sarah Palin's choice, the baptism by waterboarding lady. She said all judges and senators need to understand that U.S. laws come from God and make their and therefore they have to make their decisions, in her words, within that criteria. Joni, you damn dummy. It's within those criteria. If you want to use that, you're going to have to use criterion. It's kind of Greek. I know, it's all Greek to you, isn't it, honey? Oops, sorry about the honey. Eric Erickson, by the way, that miserable little blog he runs, was the moderator of this here debate. Because freedom. What does that mean? They would block federal judge nominees who did not adhere to natural godly law. Okay, so does that mean the next time a Supreme Court vacancy comes open, if one of these goobs is in the Senate, they're going to ask him whether or not it's okay for, say, a teenage girl to get her daddy drunk and then rape him while he's passed out? Dunno. Sure would be fun to watch, though, wouldn't it? Yeah, we're gonna be busy this evening. Ed pointing out, subject line, Jesus gun. Just engrave a Bible passage. Those killing machines will jump off the shelves. I know you're kind of joking, Ed. Well, you're halfway not. But do remember that firearms are being provided to American troops and have been for years provided to American troops in the field in Afghanistan, in which the firearms themselves are engraved with Bible verses. Even though way back when they got caught doing it during the 8-year reign of misery of dim leader, they were commanded to stop doing it. The firearms manufacturer, you know, the upstanding, God-fearing defense contractor, said, F it, we're going to do it in the name of Jesus, and just kept on doing it. You know, because it kills the Muslims so much better that way.
busy, busy, busy evening. Lots of titanic intellect. More probably than I can actually stand. And speaking of Ed's note, thank you, Ed. Thank you very, very much. Ed Ed jumped out and finished off the last of Sparky's pull the pin challenge. That means the challenge has been met. That means everybody who contributed got their money doubled. Thank you very much, Sparky, and thank you everyone who helped. And then what's more, Ed took us $21 into catching up with the rest of the or filling in a little bit more of the hole. So that means, let's see. We are at $249 now to get close to flush, and that is a big deal. So that's 25 more folks at $10 a piece, 5 at 50. You know how it goes. So thanks to everybody who's willing to help and who has helped this here evening. Let's see. We got about 9 minutes before the hour. Probably we will take a wee bit of a break now, bring the filibobster to a close. But that doesn't mean we're done with Titanic Tuesday, because I've got a Titanic censorship story that you're just gonna love. Texas Betsy sent this along to me. And I saw it bouncing around a couple of places on the Facebook and stuff earlier today. I mean, I love. Well, I mean, it's a sickening story, but who am I kidding? Oh, by the way, a reminder that Marty sort of reminds me I need to put out there. Marty just said, I'm switching to the TuneIn app and being treated to a Taco Bell commercial. So this gentle reminder. If you use one of those apps for remote streaming via your smart device, your iDevice, your tablet device, what have you, and somebody plays an ad, one of these apps plays an ad before the program begins, please understand, I'm not kidding. There is no commercial support for this program whatsoever. We're not getting a check from Taco Bell, not getting a check from TuneIn, not getting a check from Stitcher, not getting a check from ExxonMobil or any of the other companies that advertise with those outfits. So, you know, please just be aware. We provide them free content, and they sell ads on top of it. What a model. Angry has a couple of questions there, and I don't know if I can, in the time allotted, I don't know if I can deal with them, but at some point in time, we really should investigate that. Okay, thank you, Jack. Wait, what? Jack says, regarding the hole, are we digging out in? Well, we're filling it in and trying to, as we fill it in, we're trying to create a little bit of a platform whereby we can climb out. I know that the metaphor gets a little confusing sometimes, doesn't it? Oh, yeah, we got fun coming. We got lots of titanic intellect out there to share. By the way, over at headonradionetwork.com, where you will, for instance, find the PayPal button, you will find that I put a story up as a feature in the feature rotator. It doesn't have a picture to go with it or anything because it wasn't provided to us with one. And I didn't know whether to go and find an image of Bugs Bunny holding up the sign with the screw and the ball. I don't often feature right-wingery on the Horn website, but it's up there for you, because this is like wingnuttery. This is crazy with a side of stupid. And oddly enough, coincidentally, I decided to feature it as I was listening to Dr. Bill do his takedown of natural law, because Goober says, hey to Goober. Goob decided that he was going to get all freedom and explain why it is that Agenda 21 and Common Core are going to
eat your Bible or something. I really couldn't fathom most of it. But if you want to see some genuine from out in the wild wink nuttery, you can read that thing. But mercy sakes alive, I mean, dip yourself by the heel in some sort of anti-hallucinogen, anti-emetic, whatever. It's there, though. I mean, the guy's, whew, mercy. I mean, oh, Charles, get the big butterfly net. Yeah. Smart guns, dumb guns, awful, lawful gun owners. And isn't it interesting that that story came out of Georgia, where we had the previous story about the guy walking around the Little League field saying, see my gun? You see my gun? I'll show you my gun. Look, there's my gun. You know what? I can carry it anywhere I want to around here. And you can't do a darn thing about it. You want me to show you my gun some more? Mm-hmm. I like throwing people my gun. Because my gun, that's freedom to me. Mm-hmm. Ain't going to have no smart gun, though. No, no. No. No smart gun. Because that's an imposition on freedom. Because the Second Amendment doesn't say nothing about nobody having the right to take your gun away from you, pistol whip you, and shoot you in the head. Mm-hmm. Sorry, kind of looking for... looking for a little bumper music before we go to the Green News Report. I guess this song is kind of passé now, but oh well. This is Conversation Radio. This is the horn. Skype line works just dandy, Bob Kincaid Horn, and I think we solved the whole rings from line 1 to line 4 to line 5 to line 2 to line 3 to line 6 problem. And so those lines are open as well. Enjoy yourself. Take advantage of it. Well, like I said, this tune's a little passe, but it's still a dandy. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
A young cowboy named Billy Joe grew restless on the farm. A boy filled with wanderlust who really meant no harm. He changed his clothes and shined his boots and combed his dark hair down. And his mother cried as he walked out, "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." He laughed and kissed his mom and said, "You're Billy Joe's a man. I can shoot as quick and straight as anybody can. But I wouldn't shoot without a cause. I'd gun nobody down." But she cried again as he rolled away, "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." He sang a song as on he rode, his guns hung at his hips. He rode into a cattle town, a smile upon his lips. He stopped and walked into a bar and laid his money down. But his mother's words echoed again, "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." He drank drank his first strong liquor then to calm his shaking hand, and tried to tell himself at last he had become a man. A dusty cowpoke at his side began to laugh him down, and he heard again his mother's words: "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." Bill with rage, then Billy Joe reached for his gun to draw. But the stranger drew his gun and fired before he even saw. As Billy Joe fell to the floor, the crowd all gathered round and wondered at his final words: "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town."
You know, before we go to the Green News Report, I kind of got to editorialize. DJ's editorializing is probably never a good thing unless you're saying, "Yeah, she sure does love that sun and that beach. Oh, you can almost smell the coconut flavor of the tanning oil, can't you?" Coming up next. Right. But that's Johnny Cash. And that, from a generation past, was actually wisdom. There is an entire body of lore in this country, or was before, I guess, the National Pig Licking Rifle Association took it out and had it shot, about the inadvisability of gunplay. I mean, you can find it here. Hey Joe, where are you going with that gun in your hand? The old Western classic, Blood in the Saddle. It goes on and on and on. There really is. There's an entire body of wisdom, because this is how we transmit wisdom. Wisdom is often, in human cultures, not just here but elsewhere, transmitted in art, and this, by God, is art. We transmit our wisdom in art. Think of Lord Randall, that comes from Ireland and Scotland, I think, and gets transmuted into Billy Boy. Cautionary tales. And you can't help but ask, what happened? I mean, this, of course, John R. Cash is a bit of an exception to the rule insofar as he was listened to all over the country. But, you know, country western, hillbilly, the bluegrass has its roots in the agrarian rural South. You know, Johnny Cash come up out of Arkansas. And his music's full of cautionary tales about things that can happen to good people gone bad. Sure. Oh, hey, there's another good example. Michael writing in. Lynyrd Skynyrd, Saturday Night Special. It was once honorable in this country to offer good advice via music, via literature, poetry, about the horrors that firearms can wreak on individuals, on families, on towns and cultures.
And we've gone from that to Ted Nugent telling Hillary Clinton to use the muzzle of his submachine gun as a dildo. And I don't have some trenchant observation here. How did this happen? Why did this happen? How did we get from "don't take your gun to town, son," to "hey, I just come over here to this Little League game to see if y'all want to see my gun. I got it right here. You want to see my gun? I'll show you my gun. Yep, I got a gun here at this here Little League game, and not a damn thing you can do about it. Freedom. Wolverines." If Sherman really does ever invent the Wayback Machine, what do we set it for to make this not happen to American culture? I wish I had wish I had an answer. I mean, some of the songs are still being written. But what happened in the southern rural mindset that said, "Nah, you know what, we're going to take our guns to town"? Is the urge to follow authoritarianism just so profound that if the NRA said, "You won't be free unless you chop off your left hand and use it as a cauterized stump that you can use for a rifle rest"? I mean, that they do it? And they do it in Idaho and Nevada, and by the way, out there in Bundyville, whatever, the people that were using rifles with powerful scopes to put the crosshairs on the heads of BLM agents and whatnot, you know, freedom protectors. It turns out that they've gone from just protecting the freedom of Craven Bundy and, you know, making sure that the women and children are all organized to go out and stand out front. They've stepped up their game. Apparently, a letter has been sent from Democratic Representative Stephen Horsford to the sheriff of Clark County, who is named Doug Gillespie, saying that he's worried about the well-being of people in the Bunkerville area. In turn, apparently, Representative Horsford has received letters of real concern and fear because the alleged militia men have gone from just having a camp out around the Bundy, whatever it is. They've set up checkpoints on the roads in Bunkerville, and they're telling people that they have to show that they live in the area before they'll be allowed to pass the checkpoint. Or what? They'll shoot them? They're on federal highways, U.S. highways. They're on county roads, state roads. Wow. And the plutocrats and the oligarchs were worried about the Occupy people giving out free grilled cheese sandwiches. Damn. I guess we see here. Holy cow! Really? Yeah, citizen, show me your papers. I want to see your papers. I mean, I'm looking at a photograph here of a somewhat corpulent, I presume to be female, who's all gunned up and got canteens and vest on, her little camo hat, and she's got her an assault rifle with a humongous magazine on it and a giant ass scope that's about half as long as the barrel itself. And there's a fella in some sort of a crossover vehicle who's looking at her like he's wondering if she's about to just chop him in two with the weapon. So don't think that just because Craven Bundy was shown to be an old racist goober that this thing's going away. They have now occupied the area. They are heavily armed, extremely dangerous, and they are actively engaged in what I think can probably be fairly called treason. And nothing is being done about it. Not even one stinking little drone. Not even a daggum black helicopter. I mean, please. So I guess if the right wing just wants to gun up and go and occupy somewhere, hey guys, there's a little, and it's just a historic monument now, but there's a little fort in Charleston Harbor you might want to row out to. I mean, it'd be a symbolic gesture and everything, but you know what the hell? You hate our country anyway. Son of a gun. Which is probably highly inappropriate for me to say. Oh, anyway, 12 minutes past the hour. A reminder that we are trying at this point to raise $275 more dollars this evening, and your help is much appreciated, either by PayPal or by the traditional mail service. Better you use the U.S. Postal Service than FedEx because, well, it might not make it here. It might get shot up in Georgia. Mail address, of course, is at the headonradionetwork.com website. Let me take a break here and go to the green news, and I'll see if I can't just sort of get myself in a little better place. Let's try to rebumper this, okay? Yeah. This is the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Good evening. By 2 o'clock or so every afternoon, quietly start getting to her, and she'd watch the clock until he came back home. And she understood just what he needed when he came home every evening. Just a couple of beers and a couple of minutes to cuss about his day. So she'd fix him a nice hot supper while he ran it and raved about one thing or the other. She never once told him what he was going on about didn't add up to a thing. And she never touched that gun in the closet. It was his and it was there just cause he wanted it to be. She didn't get out much, so she never knew what it was that made him so afraid. Say she was a disgrace. Most men would say she wasn't much to look at, and they'd all say she'd be a lot better off if she cared a little bit more about what they all think. She could have a life of her own if she had a little pride, some silicone implants, and another man on the side. She's got a loaded gun in the closet, and it's there anytime she wants it. And her one and only man, he knows it, and that's why he put it there in the first place.
Thank you.
It's Tuesday, April 29th. 2014.
Entire towns flattened and homes and businesses shredded.
Deadly tornado outbreak rips across the South, but safer building codes still stalled by lawmakers. Good news for those who breathe, the U.S. Supreme Court upholds EPA pollution standards. California now 100% in drought, so governor attacks homeowners associations. Plus,
presto, the motor starts running with the efficiency of an automobile, and nothing is used up but the sunshine, which is free.
Well, I'll be darned.
Happy 60th birthday, solar energy.
All of that and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
It's only a matter of time now before we learn that solar power relies on clubbing baby seals.
Of course it does. Am I right, ExxonMobil? This is your Green News Report.
Those shiny panels are made from the gleam in their eyes.
Okay, Desi Doyen, some business here before we begin. First, we welcome aboard our newest affiliate partner, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, Progressive Radio Network.
The Green News Report is proud to be on PRN. You can check them out at prn.fm or listen to the Progressive Radio Network on TuneIn. Number two, all this week in Los Angeles, it is in the 90s. That is 20 degrees higher than the average high for this time of year. Global warming? Don't know. Why worry? Finally, some serious business as this outbreak of tornadoes across the U.S. over the weekend.
Yeah, tornado season is off to a deadly start. The severe storm system is still wreaking havoc across the eastern half of the nation this week. The spate of tornadoes so far has already killed 30 people in six states and injured hundreds. One local TV meteorologist was forced to evacuate the studio live on air in Tupelo, Mississippi, in the middle of their tornado coverage.
Everybody face it now.
basement now.
Go. What? Jay, now.
Forecasting technologies have improved immeasurably in recent years and provided some areas up to 30 minutes of warning for this outbreak. But tornado warnings aren't much help if there's no safe shelter to evacuate to. New policies to boost resilience against extreme weather events, like updated building codes and funding to help communities build storm shelters, have stalled in Congress and in state legislatures, like Oklahoma, where the state legislature this year voted against funding for storm shelters in schools, even after being hit by multiple record deadly tornadoes.
They still haven't voted for shelters? This is amazing to me. I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. We used to get tornado warnings all the time. We could go down into the basement, which was frightening enough. I can't imagine the people in Oklahoma and Texas, where they don't have basements in their houses. They've got nowhere to go.
The risk of violent tornadoes does appear to be increasing, but a lack of historical records means there's just not enough data on how climate change is affecting the ingredients of tornadoes. The U.S. Supreme Court on Tuesday upheld a critical clean air standard that will protect people in 28 states from toxic air pollution. The justices upheld the EPA's cross-state air pollution rule that requires polluting power plants in the South and the Midwest to reduce their toxic smog that blows across state borders into downwind states.
Two justices, Scalia and Thomas, were both against this. Apparently, they feel it's fine to pollute the air in one state and let it go to another state. And hey, that's your problem.
Record drought intensifies in California.
Tell me about it.
Governor Jerry Brown has issued a second drought disaster declaration after the U.S. Drought Monitor declared 100% of the state now officially in moderate to extreme drought. While the drought is raising food prices and intensifying conflict between farmers and the fracking industry over water usage, Governor Brown reserved special criticism for homeowners associations, telling them to stop levying fines against homeowners whose lawns have turned brown because they refuse to waste the state's drinking water on watering their grass.
During the worst drought in recorded history in California.
Right.
Got it.
Finally.
Well, the science boys have come up with a sunshine kick that makes electricity out of your sunlight.
You mean the solar battery? Yeah. Doc, that's big news.
April marks the 60th birthday of solar energy. The first ever practical solar cell was presented to the world by Bell Labs 60 years ago in April 1954 and explained in this vintage educational film discovered by Peter Sinclair of ClimateCrocs.com.
They'll have to build efficient generators that spread out over acres, even square miles, to compete with the cheap coal and oil still available to us. The answer must be sun power from our Mr. Sun.
Yep, even in 1954, they foresaw conflict with cheap fossil fuels. Now the solar industry is booming around the world and almost equal to or cheaper than fossil fuels in generating electricity.
It's a great little video, a great find by Peter Sinclair. We'll have the entire clip up at our website, greennews.bradblog.com, and it stars Eddie Albert of Green Acres fame.
A very young Eddie Albert.
Indeed.
Hilarious.
For much more on that and the stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Fresh air.
Times Square.
You are my wife.
Goodbye, city life.
Green Acres, we are there.
This has been a Film Ways presentation, darling.
Yeah. That's another one of those things that's just scorched into my brain. I want to go back to the email bag for a minute. Yeah, that second song, by the way, was Loaded Gun in the Closet. It's on the Mike Cooley of the Drive-By Truckers solo album, Fool on Every Corner. Got a note regarding the tornadoes down south last night. I just watched remotely via Facebook and what I could find online. A little town about 40 miles east of where I grew up got the snot slapped out of it by a massive tornado. I was worrying about, a lot of my friends down in Alabama. Marty pointing out, I guess the American Family Association being in Tupelo, Mississippi didn't help him any. Nope. And, you know, if they really believed in signs and stuff, maybe that would tell Brian Fisher and Donald Wildmon or whatever
that maybe they ought to cut back on the hate. But then again, I don't believe in that kind of that level of cause and effect. But whatever. You know, I get the point, Marty. I really do. A note coming in from Robert in Australia. Subject line, setting the Wayback Machine. He says, Bob, if you set the Wayback Machine to before the American Revolution and it didn't take place and the U.S. remained part of the British Commonwealth, where would it be today? Probably with a culture somewhere between what exists in Canada and what we have here in Australia, just with more money, which would mean public radio and TV like the BBC and our ABC, universal single-payer health care, public transport everywhere, etc., etc. Maybe, but, you know, and despite what Jim DeMented said, you know, he of the Heritage Foundation the other day, about how the Southern aristocracy just had a God-inspired change of heart about slavery and voluntarily decided to end it. Wow. The fact of the matter is that institution all by itself poisoned everything. Absolutely everything. So that eventually had the American colonies been stayed British, then eventually Britain probably would have had to, by force, if it had the will so to do, it probably would have, by force, had to eliminate slavery instead of the Union doing it. And it probably would, I'm speculating here, of course, I admit that, probably would have, in turn, meant that the non-slave states would have been the ones enforcing it with a little bit of redcoat backing. I don't know if that's where you set the Wayback Machine. You know, so many of the evils that have been perpetrated on this continent, I think you have to set the Wayback Machine, and you have to take a few machine guns with you to make sure that Columbus never gets to set foot on dry land, and you know maybe a couple of grenade launchers for Cortez. And I'm sorry, you were aiming at what, Mayflower people? Yeah, you don't. We'll just, I don't know. We'll way back a submarine and torpedo the Mayflower. And those ships there at Jamestown. Because between the genocide practiced on the native peoples here, and then the horrors of institutionalized human bondage. Everything else gets poisoned out of that. You can't read, for instance, the Declaration of Independence as compared to its first draft, which Dr. Bill went into earlier today, without understanding that even that document, as elegant as it is understood to be, was poisoned by slavery. Because all of young Thomas Jefferson's notions about freedom and equality went right out the door as soon as the South Carolinians and the Georgians and the North Carolinians saw the draft. What? We don't want to get nobody all uppity thinking they'd be equal to us. What are you thinking, Tom? Dang. You know, I just thought the boys were pitched in the head. I honestly don't know. I don't know. I think you could make a case for the Union bearing down harder and enforcing Reconstruction instead of running away from it. Maybe you set the, you know, there's a very famous old Twilight Zone episode where Russell, the guy who played the professor on Gilligan's Island, time travels to that night in April when Booth shoots Lincoln, trying to stop the assassination. Maybe that's the point. Hard to say. By the way, Robert mentions universal single-payer health care. Well, some things just won't die. Some dipstick right-winger is swearing up and down that there really is death panels in Obamacare. The only death panels out there are being maintained by the for-profit insurance industry. It's based on ability to pay. Please. Like I said, a bunch of stuff out there to continue our examination of the Titanic intellect of the right wing. I want to get to the book story, but I also hate to keep people waiting on hold. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
What's happening, Jim?
Oh, just listening to your great show. I missed a little bit of the beginning, but anyway, the thing I didn't hear you touch on was that anything, you know, that ruling, which was actually, I'm glad they're basically going to take the team away from him, although he's going to make a tremendous profit on it. But the thing I noticed in what I was, because I was off today, so I was watching, you know, the far left leaning in MSNBC, a little sarcasm there. And, but the thing I was thinking about, talking about the NBA, but the NBA, every team's owned by the 1%, you know? I mean.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not like you've got a Green Bay Packers situation where the town owns the team.
That's the one instance in all professional sports where you have anything, I'm going to use the S word, anything socialistic in all professional sports that I know of.
And remember, I think Donald Sterling purchased the Clippers for around $12 million.
Yeah, that was one of the things I saw, like around $12, $13 million, and now it's worth 10, 15, 20 times that.
Now, I don't know if you saw this or not, Jim, but here's a funny for you. Megyn Kelly sent one of her captive reporter, sent a Fox News Radio TV Rwanda reporter out to ask questions at the press conference today that was held by the commissioner of the NBA. And, you know, there were various questions posed to Commissioner Adam Silver. And personally, I think that if there was any justice in the world, there would be some sort of an accord reached whereby Donald Sterling was given his $12 million back and told to go packing.
That would have been great.
You know, you're not going to lose any money. Here's your $12 million. Goodbye now.
Oh, and take the fine, yeah.
Yeah, don't let the door hit you. Don't let the door hit you on your racist ass on the way out the door. Goodbye. And then sell it for market. I don't know. But essentially, he's going to profit by his racism. So I got, you know, I'm not going to go too far into the poor, poor, pitiful him. No. But anyway, so Fox sent Jo Ling Kent, a reporter, to the news conference with Adam Silver had. And whereas Lisa Guerrero from Inside Edition, I mean, yeah, this is America. Inside Edition's freaking journalism now. she wanted to know why it took the NBA so long to act. Another question was, how quickly can they shove Sterling out of his ownership of the Clippers? But this is just precious, Jim. Jo Ling Kent grabs the microphone, and she says, should someone lose their team for remarks shared in private? Is this a slippery slope?
Oh, man.
Well, God bless them. They're always going to be out there to defend racism, defend bigotry. Yeah. But here's the funny part out of all of that. It wasn't even her question. And what I mean by that, Jim, is that statement was made yesterday by Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban. I don't know if we should take the team away from him. That could be a slippery slope. And I guess Mark was thinking of himself because he's been in hot water with the commissioner's office of the NBA for a very long time. Kind of stays there. I think they got a little doghouse that he just kind of lives in as needed.
Yeah.
So I guess he's afraid that, because one guy gets called out and caught being an abject, misogynistic, by the way, adulterous, racist, that somehow that's going to open the door and Mark Cuban's going to wind up being the former owner of the Dallas Mavericks.
But, well, the other thing real quick I was thinking about was getting back to the Green Bay Packers owned by the town. I was thinking about the basketball and football players who are most, I mean, you get paid a lot whether or not you save it or do something really, you know, you invest it and you can survive off of it, because I've heard numerous stories of people and players who had great careers, but, you know, 10, 15 years they've gone through, you know, more money than you or I would make probably combined. But the thing is, how they're all pro-union for football players and basketball players, but for the average workers, the other 99%, fuck them. They don't care about them.
Oh, well, I don't know, Jim, because every time a strike is mentioned, the great masses of the American people say, well, they're millionaires. What are they complaining about? I mean, I remember the baseball strike, NFL, you know, NHL, and then that's what you, well, they're making a lot of money. What do they need a union for?
Yeah, so what if they're brain damaged after
right.
5 years in the NFL?
Yeah.
Well, then you get into Calvinism. It's God's will. And then if they get brain damaged enough, they'll be having their...
If God wanted you to have a desk job and make a few million dollars a day as a hedge fund manager, he would have made you nice and white. As it is, he gave you dark skin and the ability to run a 4.240. So get out there and make touchdowns.
That's it, man. That's it. That's it. Right on. So I'm glad you see that. I mean, but it's just, I just find the irony of it. I was watching it, and it's like, okay, yeah, that's good. But then I started thinking, like, exactly what I said. You're talking about people who make more money, the most. You know, and granted, some players, you know, because it's based entirely on your athletic ability, which is another interesting point to it. That's all luck. That's DNA luck. I mean, like you or I probably had about 0.1% chance of ever playing in the NFL, and 0.0001 playing in the NBA. Because I mean, I'm barely 6 feet. I think I've heard you say you're about 6 feet.
Yeah.
That's not really tall enough to make it in the NBA. So that's just pure DNA. That's Lucky Sperm Club, basically.
Sure.
So I mean, that irony is never lost to me, and to some extent that I've just lost. And I just, like I said before, football was the only sport I really followed. I got that. That's what Dad likes. So basically, that's all that really interested me. But I've lost more. I care less and less. It's like, because I realize it's just bread and circuses. So, you know, that's just.
I can be engaged. I'm looking forward to the NFL draft. Have I missed it yet?
Ever since
we had the cable taken out here, I've been kind of behind some of the sport, because I used to be a huge Sports Center fan and would just, you know, fall asleep to it. And what that will do to your dreams, oh Jim, it's not a good thing. Now you got me curious. No, haven't missed it yet.
I think it starts next week or whatever, and just the way the media covers.
And I'm interested because I want to see where Johnny Football goes. I want to see who's dumb enough to draft him.
That's that quarterback from Texas.
The one who screams at his coach and, you know, behaves like a real horse's rear end.
All right, well, I just thought I'd call you, get you started in.
Well, I appreciate it. It's good to hear from you. I guess what would it be in the end of April, beginning of May down there? Has the air turned sponge-like yet?
Oh, yeah. It's actually had nice rain, and we missed that.
Yeah, I was going to say, none of that crap that's blown through for the last couple of days came anywhere near you guys, did it?
We got some rain, but Jesus sent all the storms up above because he hates those religious people in other areas. So now watch him send the storm to screw up this area, but we'll see what happens.
Well, then again, it's not like you guys don't get yours in the first place between the hurricanes and the chemical companies and the refineries. Maybe you've got your share already.
Yeah, well, it's a Rolling Stone song, Dancing with Mr. D, you know. It's living the life, you know.
Yeah, living the dream, right, Jim?
Yeah. All right, and what you got?
All right, take care. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana Stan. Jack, also in Louisiana, standpoint says, I don't think one should be able to generalize private statements. The involvement of the public in every item of business of a committee or group can get to where it impedes operations to a great extent. But including racist statements and thinking into that is way overboard. Two whole different categories. Well, and remember, Mark Cuban is a big-time libertarian. So he was, I'm guessing here, but he was probably thinking about stuff he said in the past and, you know, whatever thing he might say in the future, that, I don't know, someday the collectives, because you know, the NBA owners, they're a collective. You know, they're probably sitting around there thumbing their dog-eared pages of Das Kapital or maybe the Communist Manifesto, you know, because they're billionaire Marxists, right? And that they'll take his team away. Okay. No, but I get what you mean, Jack. I really do. Thanks. Marty tells me I believe the NFL draft is next week. Don't think I got to worry about a lot of Mountaineers going anywhere. Marty with another question. Can't either of you throw or hit a baseball? Yes, I could once upon a time. I could do both. Wasn't worth a damn with a basketball. Wasn't worth a damn as an offensive lineman either, but never, almost wanted to be a tight end, but no jokes about that, please. And just never got the opportunity. Fencing, that's what I wanted to do, but we didn't have a solid arm there in the last low knee hills of the Appalachians in the Shoals. Nope, sorry. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Well, actually, I should say good evening. Good. Voice is a little bit scratchy again, but I'm not going to be on that long.
No, you don't sound.
Wanted to call.
You don't sound terrible. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I don't feel terrible at least. So, as long as I can still talk and breathe, I guess I'll call in. You know. But I was listening today. It started out as talk over this Sterling suspension. And there's a man by the name of Dave Ramsey, worked for the Colorado Springs Gazette. And he brought up a point to something. They got to talking about the Washington Redskins. And he said, you wouldn't walk up to a Native American and say, so how you doing, Redskin? So why do we allow a football team to be named that? I just thought that point was so profound that coming in the light of everything else, we still have this team of the NFL, and that the NFL isn't going to suspend their owner for keeping the team named the Redskins. No, no, they're just going to watch this play out with the NBA and do nothing and hope that it goes away.
Right, because Dan Snyder's getting some relief.
Well, yeah, Dan Snyder has the support of the NFL commissioner because why does he need to change that nickname? He's had that nickname for the team how many years now? So he doesn't want to spend the money to do that. And the league doesn't want to spend the money to do that because that would mean kind of rebranding the league to a thing. And, you know, you think of the storied rivalries over the years with the Cowboys and the Redskins, and you'd lose that. But I just thought it was a very profound statement, but, you know.
Yeah.
I would not walk up to say Tim from L.A. and say, so how you doing, Redskin?
No.
So how does that give somebody the permission to name a team the Redskins?
Well, of course, but the history of it is from a time when people gave less of a damn about the derogation of various and sundry different ethnicities. The problem lies in the fact that our sensibilities have changed, but the daggum team name hasn't changed with the sensibilities. I think eventually he'll give in to public pressure.
I think it could be a very good thing for him to give in to public pressure, because you have the opportunity to make something positive out of the change of name. And it could actually be a very positive thing for him. But being the NFL, the No Fun League, they don't want to do that. They don't want to move. I may not have agreed with Adam Silver. I guess what bothers me is that this guy made these statements in private. I understand that part of it. And I understand he also represents a team, represents the league and the team. But I don't know if I agree with a lifetime ban and the $2.5 million fine.
It was not a fine. Yeah, it was a drop in the bucket of his billionaire wealth. I mean, you know, they didn't. I mean, where sports team owners are concerned, it was a slap. It wasn't even a slap on the wrist.
No. That's kind of like saying, okay, I'm going to fine you.
And the fact of the matter is, as Adam Silver pointed out today, they may have been comments made in private, but they became public.
Exactly.
Which is
and it wasn't his first incident.
No, not by a long shot. He was an open secret. Apparently, everybody knew what a jackass this guy was. And remember, he's got a history of really cruddy dealings with African American and Hispanic Latino. Tenants of his in his real estate dealings. That's where he made his money, real estate.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's a scumbag.
Yep.
And I just I can't
pity for the man.
And let's remember, okay, the guy is married. I find it interesting that the American Values folks over at Fox are defending this guy again. You know, once more, they're out there defending the wrong guy. This guy is married, and he's got a girlfriend. And to listen to the recording is really kind of stunning. And I don't care if you sleep with him, just don't bring him to the damn game. You know, I can get another girlfriend.
Yeah.
What kind? Wow, Family Values. Somebody call Dr. Dobson.
You have to ask. Well, no, that wasn't doing any good. Dr. Dobson only is concerned about family values when it's Bill Clinton in the White House. If it's any Republican.
Or two guys picking out a China pattern.
Forgiven. Right, you know. I forgot about that, yeah.
And, you know, Marty reminds me of something here. This is not the first time it's happened. Marge Schott, after her, I'm not saying Hitler was a good guy, but he had some, you know, he had some good ideas. After that little moment, it wasn't quite as public, and it wasn't quite as swift, and it wasn't quite as definitive, but she was pretty much forced out of ownership of the Cincinnati Reds.
Yes, she was. But it also wasn't her first time when that happened.
Right.
That was another open secret that she was like that. So I feel no pity for him or the NBA, for that matter. What I do get upset about is the callousness with which he mentioned you don't appear, get your picture taken with someone like Magic Johnson, as if by virtue of the fact Magic is black.
Listen, I think there's... No. Let me drill down into this for a minute, Kevin. I think there's more to it than that. Where Magic Johnson is concerned, remember, she's the concubine. She's the girlfriend. She's the mistress, all right?
Yep.
Which presumes that at some point in time, there is something in the way of sexuality taking place, okay? And, you know, we've been talking about this history. We talk a lot on this program about this country's long history of problems relating to what is, for lack of a better term, referred to as race. And one of those components is the white man who is insecure about his own sexual prowess in the face of myths about the sexual prowess of men with dark skin. One. Two, Magic Johnson has HIV.
Yep.
Okay? Now, just play with that for a minute.
Yep. Well, either way that I come across it is I find it offensive, even if he just was upset about Magic having HIV, because... been around a lot of HIV people, and I haven't caught AIDS from them yet, getting my picture taken with them.
Yeah, sure. But you know, that statement's there in the tape. I don't care who you sleep with. I mean, what about Mrs. Sterling? Because, you know, televised games, they always show the picture of the owner, and there he's sitting with this young woman.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, is it... And I guess it's none of our business, but then again, the right wing's all about making stuff that's not their business. Is this just some sort of open relationship? Do they just have an understanding?
Well, you have to wonder about that because they haven't heard a word from her, not even a word from her divorce lawyer. So, you know, you kind of have to wonder, but you know, if this guy was a lefty, these people would be howling over him. Take out the racist part of it. If he was a lefty owner that got caught with another woman, they would be howling over him being allowed to continue in that position. But since it's their boy, and since it's a matter of race, they defend him.
Well, and look at the standards of conduct to which players and folks in ordinary walks of life are held as compared to one of these 0.1% billionaires. They can all just be little Caligulas for all the likes of Fox cares. Isn't that what that question from what's her name sort of says? I mean, this was his racism was a private matter. Isn't this a slippery slope? Well, then that sort of begs the question. I mean, that makes it sound, Kevin, as though, what, racism is okay in this country as long as you keep it private? As long as you're behind closed doors, you can use all the epithets you want, all the negative stereotypes that you want, but, yeah. Just, you know, don't let the public see it. Which is, in essence, what he was at the same time saying to his girlfriend. I mean, it can be this way, but you don't have to have your picture taken. It's like there's a set of social rules for you know, the billionaires and a set of social rules for the rest of us.
That's been that way for a while now.
Always?
There's been that set of, huh?
Always?
Like always? That which that? Yeah. Realistically. I mean, yeah. Look back upon history, and you have to say that there's a set of social rules for the 1%, and a set of social rules for the rest of us. And it transforms religion, whatever walk of life. You have a set of rules for the popes, and then you have a set of rules for the regular Catholic people. You have a set of, you know, I mean, look at all the sexual abuse by the priests.
Yeah, and there's rules, right, there's rules for kings and rules for peasants. There's rules for the robber baron class of the gilded Victorian age, and rules for everybody else, sure.
Exactly. But I just find it a little bit disingenuous of Fox to want to make this go away and say that there's nothing to be seen here, as you're saying. You know, it's a private matter. Well, it was, except for the fact of all the things that you just brought up in the past 15 minutes that made it a very public matter, not the least of which was the girlfriend part of it, because without the girlfriend part of it, this probably would have never came to light. So, you know, but Fox is very
concerned. Right, and you know, that's the concept. Right. That's what the ancient Greeks came up with in the concept of hubris. That it is a downfall that one brings upon oneself. This is that, isn't it?
I would say so. Comes to mind, Richard Nixon, I am not a crook. You know, the thing you deny the most is exactly what you are. So.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, there's a fight going on out there over the Nixon Library. I don't know if you ran across that story or not, Kevin, but that's a lot of fun. The people who run the Nixon Library are upset at the idea that somebody might come in as curator of the Nixon Library, appointed by the National Archives, who wouldn't be sufficiently deferential toward the old crook, and instead talk about what a crook he was. Never a dull moment.
And didn't part of that have to do with one of the daughters getting involved in that fight? Or I remember seeing something about this a couple months ago.
Well, I think the curator or director of the library position has been open for 2 years now, because the last guy came in and put in a Watergate exhibit and got so much hell for it that he quit.
Yeah, don't want to tell history like it is. Want to tell it like we want everybody to believe it.
Right, and Dr. Bill's old friend Stanley Cutler, who sued the National Archives to get the Watergate tapes released and won, but he has said that the current mess is quite disturbing.
Anytime anyone tries to cover up something, have you ever listened to those tapes in detail? Have you ever sat down and listened to, say, an hour's worth of those tapes at a time?
I've listened to a whole bunch of clips. I haven't sat down and listened to them for hours on end, no. But I've heard enough to know that he was a loon.
Oh, yeah.
Probably should have done prison time.
He spent enough time listening. Probably. I think you would have, except for Gerald Ford. You know, what was it Ford said? Our long national nightmare is over?
Yeah.
Uh, I think it's been going on for 40 years now, you know.
Yeah, it never ended.
Yeah.
Right. Kevin, good talking to you. You have yourself a good evening. I hope you sound better than you did. I hope you continue to feel better.
I'm feeling fine, just my voice isn't. So as long as that's the case, I'll keep on trucking.
All right. You take care, Kevin. Have a good evening.
See y'all later.
Bye now. Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. A couple of lights remaining remain blinking. Lines are open in a fully functioning phone system. 304-658-3333 is the number. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact account. Chime right in either way is fine by me. Thank you very much to Anthony, who just sent a note saying that he's putting an envelope in the mail for Boss Man Wayne. So that takes us down to $265 to go for the fundraising goal for this evening, which if we could get a lot closer to zero is a lot, well, it's the only way this operation continues to survive, either by mail or by PayPal, is entirely up to you. But it is the only thing that keeps this independent broadcast operation going. And I can't emphasize that enough. It just is. Before I go back to the phones, Randy from PA pointing out, I don't want to support the content of Sterling's message, but aren't there privacy concerns for all of us? Should their privacy be ignored? Maybe not if the girlfriend recorded it. This is a world in which there are privacy concerns everywhere. There's no getting around that. Individual states have their own laws as to who may record what. For instance, this state is a one-party consent state. It means that as long as one party to the recording consents, game's on. And consequently, well, it's not as complicated as, say, a two-party recording state. But the privacy concerns, I don't know, are privacy concerns outweighed, or do privacy concerns outweigh standards of common human decency? I think that clearly were breached and breached and breached and breached again by this guy. I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time working up a sympathy for him. Maybe you feel differently, but I just see another billionaire oligarch who is angry that he did not get treated with the kid glove deference that he feels that he is privileged to have, because this is a wealth privilege moment. You remember when Trent Lott was the majority leader of the Senate and he got caught being a racist? Well, he wanted to leverage power privilege. And at what point should privilege trump essential issues of human rights? Because it is impossible to say that none of his of this creep's basic feelings, it's impossible to say that that did not enter his day-to-day life. How would you like to have been the general manager of the Clippers? Or the coach of the Clippers, and know at all times what this guy was, and at the same time try to be some sort of insulation against it to the people that you were supposed to manage, serve, coach, prepare, whatever. That's an unbearable level of stress and hell and damnation. Let's keep going. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
And here I am, a Los Angeles person, and here I go.
Go, Tracy. You know, I've been channeling you for about a week, going all the way back to Clive and Bundy.
Oh, honey, boo.
You stopped yourself, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Did you get you a new filter?
I'm getting a filter, boo-boo. I'm working on my filter. Because, and this is a perfect example of that of working on a filter. Because my girl is one of those white people. I love her.
Yeah.
But she feels that because she's white, she can say whatever the hell she wants to say, and under the auspices of freedom of speech. And I keep trying to tell her, yes, there is such a thing as freedom of speech, but there is no such thing as freedom from the consequences of what you're going to say.
Well, you know, we can even go back further than that, Tracy, and we can point out that freedom of speech only refers to people having their speech suppressed by the government.
Government, exactly.
There's no freedom of speech in this house.
No.
In this family, there is no freedom of speech.
There's no freedom of speech. There was no, look, when I was growing up, freedom of speech was the freedom, only person that had freedom of speech in my house was my mother. And when my son was growing up, the only person that had freedom of speech was me. This was kind of, there was no democracy, okay? And as far as Mr., I'm not even, Sterling, I'm not even going to give him the title of Mr. How dare, you know, you were talking about the general manager and the coach. That's a hostile work environment.
Well, if they're having to sit around listening to that filth.
Yeah. You know, and here he is. See, because I was, you know, of course, the Facebook and everybody was all a crazed about, oh, his rights were violated. No. See,
oh, please. I remember when it was all about John Rocker's rights being, First Amendment rights being violated for the filthy stuff he said about being unwilling to ride the subway in New York.
Right. And I'm like, here's the deal, honey. When my money, granted, I'm not really a basketball fan, but if I were, and I would not, knowing that the band that owns the Clippers, that's making money off of the Clippers, is a despicable, disgusting racist. You really think that he has the right to earn money on for me? No. So I do have the right as a consumer. I have the right as anybody else to know what these people are thinking. And I say these people. Because I'm hoping that this is starting to take there's going to be a ripple effect from this, because he is now banned for life, okay?
Don't think for a minute that can't be taken to court, and don't think he doesn't have the lawyers to do it and the money to pay the lawyers with.
He does have the lawyers. Oh, I mean, this is not done by any shape, form, or fashion. But the thing is, he, like I said, by the time all the lawyers and the dust settled, nobody's going to want to have anything to do with him. So yes, you could take me. He could take people to court over it. But if you're not, if you're going to lose sponsors, if you're going to lose your fan base, if you're going to lose your players, because I guarantee you that if he does say he goes to court and he's able to, you know, for any shape or keep his franchise, what brother in his right mind is going to want to play for the Clippers?
Yeah, draft day is going to really suck for somebody.
Exactly.
As long as he's the owner.
And so here's the deal. Because I, you know, again, still not caring so much about the basketball and all that, but I heard that...
Yeah, but you care about your community. You're an Angeleno, and it matters, right?
I care. It matters. It freaking matters. And I was hearing, and maybe I misheard, but they were saying that if, in fact, they did not take the franchise away from him, that they were going to let the players exercise a clause to get out of their contract if they chose to do so.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day, Tracy, because everything in my world has a movie reference of some sort. You remember the really, really awful woman who was the owner of the Indians in that movie from back in the 80s, Major Leagues?
Major League. Love that movie. Love the movie. I don't care. I love that movie.
You know, sooner or later, life surpasses art.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this guy has, and this guy has surpassed her. But I was wondering if maybe you get a story like that because there are stories that come out of professional athletics that there really are owners out there that are that odious, that nasty. And of course, you know, Marty brought up Marge. Shot. We got this guy.
we got the owner of the Washington Football Club.
Right.
Who among them is a good person? And you got Mark Cuban out there saying, well, I don't know if we ought to take the team away. You know, it's a slippery slope because I'm a libertarian.
Sit your monkey ass down somewhere, because if you keep talking, then people will start walking away from the Mavericks too.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if there was any pushback or you don't know. Well, you know, first of all, can we establish some basic parameters to the discussion about all of this, Tracy? One, what's it cost to go? And I'm just talking about tickets. I'm not talking about parking or getting a hot dog or. And I'm not talking about the seats down there sitting next to Mr. Sterling.
Right, or Billy Crystal.
Yeah, I mean, what's it cost to go to a Clippers game and sit up there where you've got to have an oxygen mask like you're on a B-17 bomber in the Second World War?
Probably about $40. They're not as expensive as the Lakers tickets. Even though the Lakers are in a shithole team right now.
Oh God, they are bad, aren't they? And that's hard on me because I was raised to be a Lakers fan.
I mean, it hurts my heart. I mean, like I said, I'm not a big. It's not that I'm not a Lakers fan or I don't care, but like you said, you brought it up, I'm an Angelino, okay? I grew up with Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and James Worthy and, you know, all these amazing basketball players, and it was the Lakers, even at their worst.
Well, you'd probably even like to see an NFL franchise come back to L.A., wouldn't you?
Yes, I would. As a matter of fact, I would. Because this, you know, as much as it pisses me off sometimes and I'm stuck in traffic at 11 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the morning and I just don't understand why, there's no reason for me to be stuck in traffic. This is my home. And I am very, very proud of being from Los Angeles. Okay? So, when I hear, you know, like I said about the, you know, I would love to support a football team because you know why? This is why. Because I love my, as much as it will worry the hair off my ass traffic-wise, I'm thinking about the jobs that it's going to bring. I'm thinking about the tax revenue to put back into the community and all these other things unless, you know, we get screwed like other cities. And then there's
the intangibles, like the fact that it's southern freaking California and you've got a hockey team but no football team.
Yeah, we have a hockey team.
Hey, wait. You want a real nightmare scenario, Tracy?
Oh, Jesus.
How about Sterling goes out there and tries to lure an NFL franchise to L.A.?
Oh, not gonna happen.
No, I don't think this guy could get a ball in L.A. after this.
No, I at this point he would be lucky to what's that game that they play in Florida? High Line.
Can't even get a fronton in L.A.
No, he's not going to happen. I mean, for all intents and purposes, like, you know, even if, you know, he has the money and the lawyers to, you know, fight this, you know, down to the bitter end, not one black player is going to ever play for him. Not one. I mean, he could have a lily white team, and you know, I'm sorry. Yes, you could have an all white basketball team in the NBA, but not so much. I don't know how well they're going to do. I don't know. I mean, even at Notre Dame and all the, you know, the whitest, even Brigham Young has a couple of brothers on the team. Yes. So I mean, how many are there? Is there such a thing at this in this day and age of a basketball team? With an all white team doing anything. I mean, they even ship brothers overseas to play in Italy and all that.
Sorry, you just kind of got me with that.
What? Am I wrong? I mean, look, again, I'm not a basketball person, I'm not a sports person, but I know enough about these things to know that, and maybe I am sounding like a bit of a racist, that brothers know how to play ball. And I'm just asking, and I'm seriously asking somebody because I know you love you some basketball.
Now I like college a lot better than pro.
No.
I mean,
oh yeah, college, and I'm referring to college, and that's what I was saying about, you know, college basketball teams. of all the basketball teams in college, even at the whitest, most probably racist schools across the country, don't they have at least a couple of brothers on the team?
Yeah, it's almost impossible.
That's what I'm saying. And like I said,
because actually this conversation came up, Tracy. There, this topic came up maybe what last week when I was talking about the Supreme Court ruling that declared, you know, racism is over because they struck down any consideration. Michigan voted to strike down any consideration of race in any part of the application process. And see, this is where my little bullshit light went, you know, just blood red. Because you cannot tell me that there is no consideration of race in recruiting of athletes at the University of Michigan or Michigan State or Eastern Michigan or... Does that make any sense?
Yes, because you're saying, okay, well...
I mean, I got a black dude who runs a 4.440, and I got a slew-footed white guy who runs a, you know, you can time him with a stopwatch. You can time him with a sundial. Who's playing tailback?
Right.
And where are you going to go? And these are essentials in things like recruiting. Where are you going to go?
Mm-hmm.
To find the next hot freshman for your number one recruiting class in the country.
You're not gonna go to some prep school.
Not unless they're affirmative actioning in some folks of color.
And not me, not and hello.
I mean, this is really, as a white guy, this is really dangerous ground for me to be on.
Because this is the reality, and this is that hypocrisy and that double standard. You go to the hood to get the like you said, the running back, the whatever, the tight end, the center, the guard, the whatever. You know, I'm like, again, not knowing enough about positions, but you know what I'm saying. You come to the hood to get the young brothers. And I'm going to say it. Okay, brace yourself. You ready?
Yeah, okay.
You go to the hood to get the young black buck to be on your slave farm to play on your sports team, but and make money for them. And heaven forbid they get hurt, because then they're done. Because you know you're not going to put any effort into their education. You're just going to make sure that they can run that ball. They can run that ball, dribble that ball, shoot that ball, whatever the hell that you want them to do. God help them if they get hurt. But then you won't go back to the hood. You won't go to the hood to get that young, you know, kid that has the potential to go to your school and make something of himself because, well, we can't have too many Negroes. You know, we can only have so many Negroes at school.
No pushback here. I mean, I want to make sure I don't get myself in hot water with myself. I'm not saying like people are going to send, you know, hate mail or whatever. But I actually try to work on privilege issues. I try to work on them with myself, on myself. And, you know, this thing has legs and roots, Tracy. I mean, this is about how we treat young athletes, black and white.
Mm-hmm.
This is about whether or not a university is a life support system for an athletic department.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about whether or not we're serious about educating the young men and women who come into athletic departments. And if somebody leaves your athletic department and can still barely read and write, the university failed, the athletic department failed, the boosters failed. And even under the best of circumstances, where, you know, somebody graduates a year early with a year left on their eligibility. They start graduate school. They graduated in pre-med with a 4.0. I mean, it happens.
Mm-hmm.
If all during that time they have, in essence, labored for free, what is that? I mean, there are words. I mean,
I call it slavery.
Yeah, and well, I don't know that we can go all the way there, but I think we can talk about indentured servitude.
Indentured servitude. Okay, maybe not slavery, but indentured servitude. Because, like you said, they've labored for 4 years, and okay, so maybe you'll get an education, maybe not. But the chances
are... Well, what happens to the scholarship athlete who, say, at the beginning of a promising, at the beginning of his very promising senior year, junior year, we got to work back junior, blows out his knee? Because, see, I know by personal acquaintance what happens. Scholarship go bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
Education is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to be a proud son or daughter of Harvard on the wherever. You're gone. And it doesn't matter how much labor you have given in exchange for whatever education you've gotten up to that point, you're not going to finish it.
Nope.
Because the indentured servant is no longer useful.
He's no longer useful. That's my point. And that is my point. Because there should be, where do the protections come in? Okay.
Well, I mean, in the case of Northwestern University, for instance, Tracy, the NLRB in Chicago ruled that there are no protections. That's why Northwestern's football players were allowed to have a vote on whether or not. The other thing that the NLRB found in hearing the case was that because so-called student athletes put in 70 to 80 hours of work per week, that they were deemed employees of the university. and this isn't, you know, this isn't just, it's interesting that you raise, that you bring the issue up and that you give such breadth to it, because I had a note from Dr. John a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
In which he pointed out that the, and see, labor is labor as far as
labor
I'm concerned.
Is labor. I don't give a damn.
Dr. John was pointing out that the Maryland Institute College of Art in Baltimore, adjunct faculty, part-time faculty there, have won the right to organize under SEIU Local 500.
Good.
And he says this is a big deal. Listen to these statistics. Adjunct faculty currently teach as much as 70% of classes at colleges and universities in the U.S. They're paid per class. They receive no health insurance or sick time. They sign semester contracts. Dr. John says many that I know earn approximately $1,500 a semester. That's less than $500 a month for a teacher scholar with a Ph.D. degree. And they work adjunct positions at multiple colleges to pay the bills. He says, these are some of the most dedicated teachers I know, and this job locks them into a career path with no future, no chance to conduct research, and thus no chance to advance into a tenure-track position.
I have a couple. One of my professors when I was at Valley College, he's been an adjunct professor forever. And one of my regular customers, well, she's not a regular customer. She was a customer, and we became, you know me, I just make friends with everybody, and we still communicate and talk, and she's an adjunct also. Same, and that's how I knew about this whole bullshit with the adjunct, because, like you said, nobody realizes. I mean, when you go to college and you say, I want to teach, I love teaching, okay? So this is my chosen career. I have put my heart, blood, and soul into my education and everything because I want to give back or what have you. And then you put all this into it, and then you wind up part-time, and like you said, basically make it $500 a month, and they have to go, you know, they have one. She has a Ph.D.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if she has a Ph.D., but I know she has at least a master's. She has to do tutoring. She has to work at the the tutoring center for the English writing, the writing center.
Yeah.
Teach classes and all this, and still have to come up with a lesson plan and all this, and she's basically making $4.25 an hour.
Because freedom.
Freedom. Well, it's the same with me. Okay. Let's do the math on how much I actually make as a cab driver. Okay. So I get, because I can do a school run. Okay. So on average, I make about $1,200 a week. Now, of that $1,200, 10% I have to give back to the company. Okay. So now we're down to what? So we went from 1,200 to what? Like 10, 20 or whatever. Okay. So then out of that, I have to give the owner of my cab $657 a week. So basically, by the time the dust settles, I'm making about $400 a week, but that's before I buy gas.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm fortunate in the fact that I have, everybody says, well, gee, Tracy must be. No, I mean, I hustle. And if, let's just say that if I wasn't on disability, I would have a lot. It would be very difficult for me. And this is why, so on average, a cab driver for 12, on average can make basically about $50 a day, if that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And see, this is why you have all these accidents. Because, we're only supposed to drive 12 hours a day. And I'm fortunate that I have, Jan and I, and I have my little money that I get from my disability and all that. So we're okay. But a lot of these other drivers are not. You're only supposed to work on average 12 hours a day, but they work longer because they got to make ends meet.
Oh,
right?
whenever I'm in D.C., sooner or later we'll wind up taking a cab ride. And I always remain, I'm always amazed at the professionalism of the drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact, because it's obvious, it's a brutally hard living.
It's brutal. It is absolutely.
But there's not a hell of a lot of work in America that ain't.
No.
Because that's been the overall goal of the Donald Sterling class. Let's just go ahead and make him the poster child for the 0.1%, shall we?
Yes, we shall.
Their entire goal has been nothing but wage depression. The heart and soul, there was a thing way, way, way back in the early part of the aughts. There was an essay, and you might find it yet, called Cheap Labor Conservatism. And the thesis of the essay was that once you trim away all the distractions, the heart and soul of conservatism is nothing but wage depression.
That's all it is.
And the genius of conservatism has been to convince a significant portion of the people whose wages are being depressed
to keep voting them, to
keep supporting them. What was it? It was Gould who said, "I can get half of the working class to kill the other half of the working class," wasn't it?
I don't know, but that sounds like somebody that sounds like basically what people said. And it is so very sad. I mean, I saw that you about Hawaii finally going to $10 an hour. For their minimum wage.
Right.
And I wrote, I was making $15 an hour in 1988.
Yeah.
But yes, and it was a union job.
And that's, that's where the minimum wage needs to be right now. $15.
Minimum. 15. Because, it tickles me. I've never been to Hawaii.
Nor I.
There's a lot of places that I'm like, eh.
Well, I mean, if I understand correctly, the cost of living in Hawaii is considerably more than it is on the mainland.
Yes, it is. It costs more to live in Hawaii than it does to live in L.A. because you got to ship everything in.
Yeah, even the spam.
You know, because, you know, have you ever, you noticed these, you know, these things that I noticed, you know, when you're doing shipping or have you, or you're ordering something, and it has how much it costs to ship?
Yeah, except Alaska and Hawaii.
Or Hawaii.
Sure.
You're flying over a large body of water. Come on. So, of course, things are going to cost more there.
Fuel.
You could only, you know, fuel. You know, I mean, right now, hell, what? You know how much I'm paying a gallon? The cheapest I'm paying for gas right now? Remember, told you I had to pay for my own gas. The cheapest I've paid is $4.19.
Yeah, well, Marty was asking earlier, he said, has $4 a gallon gas gotten to Southern California yet?
Oh, it's been $4 for, what is this, we're in April? Towards about the end of, right during spring break, so maybe at about mid-March, did it start going into the $4 mark. And it was just going up, it was going up 2 cents every week, pretty much every other day until it got to, because I get Shell gas, so I pay more, but of course, thank God for Ralph or few point rewards, and we buy enough groceries that I get 20 cents a gallon off. So gas at the cheapest route, I'm sorry, cheapest gas at Shell station right now is about $4.31. So then I pay $4.11 because I get 20 cents off.
Wow.
Again.
Yeah, we are all indebted to those little fuel savings cards now, aren't we? See, my little Rippy Mart down the road has a deal where, whatever you spend down there, for every $5 you get a penny off gas.
Okay.
And I'm a beast with that thing.
Man, I'm telling you.
For instance, the points I've got now on my card are good through May the 31st.
Yeah, mine's are. I just used the last of my March fuel points.
And I'll save them. You know, I won't use them. I'll save them. And yeah. So they got different deals in the store where if you buy a cup of coffee, they'll give you 2 cents off instead of a penny.
Right. And nobody should, you know.
And it's probably a ripoff in the first place, but it feels awful good because I've done it.
It feels good.
I went in and I bought $20 worth of gasoline. I mean, I bought 20 gallons of gasoline at what was then $3.36 a gallon for $1.94.
Doesn't it?
Oh, you know what they did? They took a spare copy of the receipt, highlighted the price, and taped it to the wall. Hey, that's the guy.
Oh no, honey, let me tell you. Back in the day when they used to still double coupons and stuff, and I had my coupons and this and this and this, and by the time I was done, they owed me money at the cashier, and it was because I would only shop at certain times of the day, you know, because I would have like a crap load of coupons. So, and, you know, the markets over here by my house are 24 hours. So I would go in like right after they finished stocking the shelves and it wasn't busy or what have you. And they would know that I was coming, you know, and it was like I would get applause by the time I was done with my coupons. But they don't double coupons anymore out here. Do they still double coupons out your way?
Some places. But, you know, Wally World has done a magnificent job of just crushing the local groceries. I mean, we lost our Kmart, our combined Sears and Kmart. We lost to Wally World. And their next goal is wiping out Kroger's. And, you know, the same people that own Ralph's. And after that, they very nearly crushed our only local grocery store here about 6 miles up the road, our Piggly Wiggly, or as I like to call it, the Wiggling Pig. They participate in the fuel points program, so I try to buy as many of my groceries there as I can. And they're local folks. They don't know, but they're not doubling any coupons.
Speaking of the Walton, so what is this I hear about them building something for $1 billion?
Who, what?
A museum asshole Ann Walton or something.
Oh, no.
Let's see if I can find it.
Oh, I got a. By the way, I got a comment for you, Tracy, coming in from our buddy Asa in Vancouver. He says, before we all get worked up about $4 a gallon gas, please understand, we've been paying $6 a gallon here for a very long time, and you know,
yeah.
and he points out that the Canadian and U.S. dollars are damn near equal now.
Yeah, I mean, we really can't complain because, I mean, when I pick up people from Europe, they marvel at how much we're paying for gas here.
Because it's so cheap.
Right. And then remember, they're paying it by the liter.
Right, but they're also getting something in return for the taxes that they pay.
Exactly.
I mean, when I go to gas up the vehicle here in almost level West by God, Virginia, there's a sticker on there, and you know it was put there by the Gas Retailers Association. You are paying almost 54 cents in taxes.
Yeah, but where are my taxes going?
Right, and at least with the high fuel prices in Europe and the rest of the world, they've got a viable transportation infrastructure. They got trains, they got meaningful bus service, they got medical, they got, they've got 6 weeks paid vacation a year.
A year?
Yeah, and you don't have to work for 5 years to get your first decent vacation.
No. Exactly.
So.
And this is why it tickles. Janet sent me a text to tell me that they're, protesting around Staples Center right now.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. I love it because there's this thing. I was going to go work downtown today, and then I'm glad I didn't because I'd be stuck in that right now. And who knows? I probably would have been there protesting too. But yeah, apparently one of the Walters is it Ann?
Oh God. I'm going to be looking this up as you talk about it.
Yeah, because I'm looking for it myself, and if you could find it, because you probably do stuff faster than I do. About spending, I guess Bill Maher went off on her. You're spending $1 billion on some museum. Why don't you give your employees a fucking raise?
Yeah.
You know, and
$800 million endowment for the Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art.
Yes.
Back in 2013, they said it was scheduled to open in Bentonville, Arkansas.
Arkansas, really?
Now, let's not pretend. Let's not think that Arkansans don't like art too.
No. I'm not even talking about that. I'm just wondering. Who cares?
Well, remember, she's doing this because she's got this vast collection of American art, and she's going to get a big old tax write-off for it.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise known as 1% billionaire welfare.
Welfare.
Alice Walton is a welfare queen.
So it's
they're all welfare queens.
You
think Donald Sterling is a welfare queen?
He gets some subsidies because doesn't he have real estate holdings and whatnot and so forth? And I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and has been busted in the past for shady dealings with members of the Latino community and the African American community.
Mm-hmm. And so there was a reporter at at the press conference because just so happens. On the rare occasion, I was at my friend's house getting my dress, the wedding dress. She was doing my fitting, and so we were watching this. And I'm going, so there's somebody stood up and said, "Okay, so you guys are snatching this and doing this and this, but what are you saying? Because they're saying obviously this behavior is not new." That people have known for a gazillion years that this guy was an awful, awful human being. but nobody did anything.
Yeah. Well, he got one NAACP award for, you know, geez.
Humanitarian.
By the way, Devin had a suggestion for what we need. Devin has diagnosed Donald Sterling. He's suffering from PMDS. Plantation Master Derangement Syndrome.
Oh, so him and now that we went back to the plantation, let's talk about our homeboy. Clive and Crazy.
I was wondering when we were going to get around to him. You know, he understands you, Tracy.
You know, and I'm so glad because, see, I have spent 48 years of my life trying to figure myself out and my whole race. And I think this fat, obnoxious, odious.
Disgusting? You want to go for disgusting?
Disgusting welfare king. For telling me about myself and that how I should be still picking cotton because my life would have been so much better had I stayed on that.
Well, you had better families. You singing all the time.
I was a happy Negro. Or my favorite phrase, a noble Negro.
Yeah.
And then let me go back to how the Supreme Court has decided that racism is no more. And so I live in California, which is supposed to be, you know, hippy-dippy, happy-happy.
It's all a pigment of your imagination.
Right. So did I tell you, or have I told you about the old white man that almost hit me turning left and told me, move, you stupid nigger?
Oh, no.
And the only reason why...
Did he have a very bad day thereafter?
I guess no, because I couldn't go after him because I had the kids in the car. So that was 2 weeks ago, okay. And then just a couple of days ago, I'm driving down the street and this woman is trying to cut me off, right? And there was nowhere for me to go, and she's trying to. There's only one so much room one lane can have, and I swear to God, only one car per lane in these parts. What about in your part of the country too?
Are you kidding? Where I am? We get two, sometimes one.
Okay, so typically, so who's supposed to be one car per lane or what have you, you know? And so, so this chick, I catch her, I just tied him up, you know, out of the corner of my eyes, trying, and there was nowhere for me to go, so I just kept, I sped up so she wouldn't hit me, you know? And so, we get to the point when it turns into a three lane. So there's the left turn lane, the middle lane, and the right turn lane. And I was turning left. So she drives by me and screams, I hope you die, nigga. Now. That's twice in 2 weeks that I have lived in this country, in this state, in this city. For 48 years, you know, and, you know, 42 of those that I'm consciously, because I was 5 years old, consciously aware of my surroundings and things that I can remember dating back 43 or some odd years. I have been called nigga more times in the last 2 years than I have been called in my entire life.
And that means, I mean, yeah. Well, you sure it's not since 2008?
No. Actually, it's just been in the last 2 years, and even more so because 2008. Now, when he was elected, I almost got run off of the road and got screamed at, and I'm like, get over it. He won, and I live here, so. Pretty much uninventable from 2008 to 2012 that I didn't really have any, nobody's really said anything to me that I heard. Let's just say that. But when the first time that happened last week.
Is that, Tracy, let me ask you from a sociological standpoint, mm-hmm. just real quick. Do you think there is an element, and this is not a rhetorical question, this is for your input. Because the white wing is so constantly aggrieved, you know, they constantly say, well, those people use it about themselves all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll stop using it soon as they do. Do you think that's an element of it?
No.
The closet racists and the folks with the Grand Dragon pajamas and stuff, you make us be politically correct.
What I've noticed, and I brought this is one of those things that I have to, you know, educate my girl on, and I've noticed that in the last 2 years, when, you know, you have, you know, Craven and all these more and more racists coming out of the woodpile, and that it's becoming okay to be a racist, you know, because before 2008, people kept that shit pretty well squashed. You talked as much shit as you wanted to, but you kept...
Well, I wonder about it in popular culture. I think back to, and I can't remember the actor's name, but the, and he was hilarious. The actor in The Hangover. I just mentioned it's in the chat room, or was going to.
The Hangover.
The Hangover.
The Hangover.
Yeah, he's an Asian guy, and he N-word, please, you know we all dead inside.
He's hilarious.
But is there a certain amount of acceptability that's created by that kind of thing? I mean, I was a little squeamish the other night when we were talking about Craven Bundy, and I ran that clip, you know, script by Richard freaking Pryor, of, you know, sing us a spiritual, you know, like
right.
Decamp Town Ladies.
Ladies and I love it. Look, Blazing Saddles is one of them. You know, so it's so funny, Bob. That in my head, because this a little while before I called you, I was thinking about Blazing Saddles. And how brilliant Mel Brooks was.
Well, I love the fact that Mel Brooks wanted to cast Richard Pryor as Sheriff Bart, but he was deemed by the studio to be too edgy.
Too edgy. So they got Cleavon Little.
Who turned out to be brilliant.
Brilliant. But the cap...
Are we awake? Are we black? We're black. Then we're awake, yeah. But we're very confused.
Right. The Camp Town Ladies... Decamp Town Lady, and then they call it too. I get no. Kids.
And see that was an equal opportunity offensive clip, because then Slim Pickens comes. Why did I say Slim Whitman? Then Slim Pickens comes riding up and says, "I don't pay you to behave like a bunch of Kansas City F words."
You know.
Mhm. And wow. In what, 1972, 1973, 1974, for some reason it played. You could not run that as on a first run in movie theaters today.
No.
And I don't know why. And I'm not complaining.
I don't know why.
The other thing I referenced was the classic skit between Chevy Chase and Richard Pryor with the word association game.
Yes.
You know, honky. Or N-word, dead honky. Yeah, remember that one?
Dead honky, yes. So, exactly. So, and see, the problem is, again, we are so uncomfortable with the open and true discussion about race. Racism is destroying this country. Racism has gotten worse. Like I said, it's been in the last 2 years when President Not So Sure was reelected, when there was just nobody, there was not one Republican that could beat him. And like they figured, okay, we could deal with him for 4 years. We can hang. But now we got another 4 more years. And they can't handle it, Bob. They just cannot handle it. And as a result, people have just lost their ever motherfucking mind. And it is sad because we have the potential.
Well, I mean, I have to deal with it, and I have to deal with these issues in a real world basis, because that line from that movie, The Hangover, please, and it's you know, ends with an A, not an ER when it's spelled out.
Nigga, please.
Yeah, I can't. I won't.
No, don't say it.
But I have to. But you know what? The white kids around here say that to each other.
And it's just like I tell you, and
it's like, you know, I'm just hollering down a well, trying to say, stop that, quit that, don't do that, that's disgusting.
I tell Jan, because we have these discussions, because again, born and raised in Brentwood, Jewish. I mean, she was shocked when we went up into the Appalachian, up into, you know, the Blue Ridge, you know, the Appalachian Trail. And we're driving up in the mountains of North Carolina, and she's like, are those Confederate flags? I'm like, yes.
Yes, dear, they are.
They are. And she's like, is that illegal? I said, no, it's called freedom of expression, hon. She's like, but your mom lives in this part of the country. I'm like, and so?
I guess that was before they put the giant one up there on I-95 by Richmond.
Yeah, that was before that. What? There's a giant Confederate flag at I-95 in Richmond.
Mm-hmm. They had a big flag flying ceremony and had speeches from white people about how they was expressing pride and their heritage, and all the band played Dixie, and they had some chicken and, you know, dinner on the ground like in the good old days, and oh mercy.
So the only thing that was missing was a Negro hanging from a tree?
You could say that.
And again, this is why.
That's okay. One of these days, I'll just be your little tour guide through the South, and I can take you northbound on the south side of Nashville, and I can show you the giant, really hideous, ugly, gold-colored statue of Nathan Bedford Forrest, father of the Klan. That sits hard by the interstate, and can't nobody do anything about it because it's private property. Big old Confederate flag a flying. Or as it turned out, my personal favorite, Tracy. The National Voting Rights Museum is in Selma, Alabama, across the river from downtown Selma. And there's a big old billboard with a picture of Nathan Bedford Forrest on it, hanging right over, Nathan Bedford Forrest staring right down at the museum.
God bless the man.
Yeah, I know. You just want to cue up Lee Greenwood all over again, don't you?
It's just, like I said, it just ceases to amaze me, and I don't get myself all worked up as much as I used to anymore. What helps me get through is educating my girl, and like when she says stuff, I'm at that point. I have now told all my friends that are lighter than me that they have to do and read certain things or they can no longer be my friend. And I have given Jan reading assignments, and whenever she says something stupid, I call it on a And I do feel this is such a thing as unintentional racism because it's privilege. And until somebody calls...
Bingo, it's a privilege issue.
It's a privilege issue.
Now, I don't think that's what we got with Donald Sterling. No,
he's just a straight-up racist.
Now, by the way, apparently Mark is telling me via email that there's a pregame news conference coming soon in front of the Clippers. Before the game or something. Hey, Tracy, I got to roll out of here, but it has been wonderful hearing from you. I'm glad. It only took me about 4 days to do it, but I'm glad I got you conjured in on all this.
Well, it was either going to be me or Sandra, so hey.
Well, she was here last night.
Oh, okay, I'm going to have to listen to the podcast just to hear her take on it.
And you know what? Y'all going to be neighbors.
What do you mean? She's moving to the, what?
She announced last night she's moving to L.A.
Where does she live?
Well, right now she's in Northern California.
Oh, why is she coming down here? Oh, I'm going to call her.
Work.
No.
Work.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, you know, I told her, you know, she's got an entire support system there in Southern California to just kind of get right into the groove.
Yes. So, well, with that said, I will keep that in mind. You have a wonderful rest of the evening, and I promise I will try not to stay away again so long.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that.
Okay.
We'll talk soon.
All right, baby.
Bye now. Tracy calling from Southern California. Nobody quite like her. One more call before the end of the evening. By the way, thank you very much to Sal. Sal jumped in, and we are now down to $265 to go on tonight's fundraising goal. Hopefully we can take a big bite out of that between either, well, next 4 minutes or, you know, between now and airtime tomorrow night. I hope. PayPal button, traditional mail, your call. It's what keeps us going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, you're talking to me again, huh?
I'm talking to you, Bill. What's happening?
Oh, man, so much. You got the crank turning. this bunch out west, this bungee crowd, all I can say is, and I hope Jim is listening, your neighbor, where is Leventi Beria when we need him?
That's cold. Well, no, honest to God, in the short amount of time we've got remaining, Bill, how long before somebody pulls up to one of those patriotic militia checkpoints and something bad happens? What happens when somebody wants to drive through on the public road financed by the United States taxpayers and they say no and he drives on and your militia man starts shooting?
Well, see, if I was running the thing, these guys would, they'd be stopped on their way home and they'd be,
Well, I mean, can you stand your
hot light?
Can you stand your ground in Nevada? I mean, if you got a bunch of people with guns standing by the side of the road and you pull up to their little imitation BS checkpoint, can you not be in fear for your life and blow them away and keep driving? I mean, that's the America the NRA wants, isn't it?
I wonder what would happen to these guys if they went up against professionals. Well, the guy who's like overlaps his belt by 6 inches.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. They'd wet themselves at the sound of a slide being pulled back and around jacking in.
Because, man, they'd be up against some weaponry that, well, look what happened down in Texas again. The damn religious fanatic down there that they should have arrested when he was out on the street by himself. Instead, they burn out the damn building and kill a lot of innocent people, a lot of kids and etc. and look like idiots when these guys, I don't know, these guys would never serve.
And I think the Obama administration has tried, Bill, to not have that happen. That's why they've been as gentle as they have. But these people, you know, if they're stopping people on the road now who are just using taxpayer roads, at that point it rises to the level of insurrection. They're declaring who can go and who can come, and they are impeding the right of free travel in the United States. Hey, Bill, we got to get out of here, man.
Anyway, you take care.
Let's jump to it. I got my
vicious point across about that. How I feel about the way they're acting.
You know what? I guarantee you that yours is the only mention of Beria in all of talk radio in the entire United States. Bill, have a good evening. We'll work on it some more.
You don't know that name, I'm telling you. That guy was something else.
Well, we'll work on this some more tomorrow.
Not mad at all.
All right, take care.
Take care.
Mr. Stress, Bill, calling from Cleveland. Time to get out of here. Time running out fast. Thanks to everybody who has helped in keeping all of this going. It is profoundly appreciated, and hopefully more will stand by your side in keeping the horn lit up. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you. Thank you, Sparky, for your pull the pin challenge this evening. As you can see, it made a world of difference. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox, to Ben Birch. Thanks to all the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Here comes Rick Smith on the horn.